and welcome to this Monday edition of Public Affair. This is your host, John Quinlan. We're very pleased to have in studio with us, joining us for much of the hour, the award winners from Outreach, Madison's LGBT Community Center, from their annual banquet, which is happening this Friday. And in just a moment, we're going to get into, I think, a fun discussion, too, evocative of the power of storytelling, of sharing of ourselves and making ourselves known to the community. And we're going to be exploring that in many, many different aspects. So to preview, among other things, we're going to be talking with a leader from an organization of the year that represents LGBT people in Latino communities. Talking about work with AIDS, education in many different realms, talking to someone who is an ally from the organization known as PFLAG, a volunteer of the year doing the nitty-gritty down-to-earth volunteer work that has to be done, and also someone from Perfect Harmony talking about an original piece of work, and lastly, our woman of the year, someone who has worked in many different realms, including making inroads in religious communities and making a place for LGBT worshipers and clergy. So just to be a fascinating show. But first, we want to talk about another very valuable community event that's coming up. This is a relatively new event in the community, a film series, Madison community-related films. And Lisa is on the line to give us a description. Lisa, I apologize. I don't have all of my notes in front of me, but I didn't want to mispronounce your last name.
Okay, I'm Lisa Metower with Madison Public Library. Thanks for having me, John.
Glad to have you on. This is a film series, and it's just getting started out for the fall, but the first event is coming up this Saturday, is that right?
Yes, it's coming up this Saturday, the 15th, at 1 o'clock at the Sequoia Branch Library. What this is, John, is... back in 2010, I joined with Community Cinema, which is an organization founded by the Independent Television Service. And what they do is they showcase independent lens films at about 95 locations around the country in order to promote civic engagement and public education. They're trying to get the community together to talk about major social issues of our time. So this month, we're... starting our 2012-2013 series with a film called Half the Sky. It's a film by Nicholas Kristof and his wife Cheryl Wu Dunn, who are New York Times reporters. And this film is a very important film based on a book that they wrote a couple of years ago. Would you like me to go on and tell you about the film?
Sure. One thing I know about the context of the film is typical of the series that you're doing, but in addition to the film, there's a side-by-side presentation kind of talking about some of the issues that are raised. Is that right?
Yes. Usually for these films, we invite community members, people with expertise in the subject of the film. Each film in the series has a different theme, and so I try to find community members who have some expertise in the subject that the film is about. So, for instance, I have Jan Miyasaki from Respect Madison. She's the director of that project. She's coming in to help talk about the issues in this film, as well as Sylvia Armstrong from Slave Free Madison, and then two professors, Sarah McKinnon from UW and Lisa King from Edgewood College, are coming to be part of a panel discussion. What we do is we show the film, and the films run from about an hour to an hour and a half, and then afterwards we have our community members sort of join in the discussion about the topics in the film.
So once again, just to make it explicit, in this case, part of the meaning of the film is to talk about the incidents of slavery worldwide, exploitation of women in terms of sex workers, other folks that are often coerced into these roles, and so the panel will evoke some of the themes that are in the film itself.
Yes, exactly. What the authors of Half the Sky found out in there, they were actually researching Tiananmen Square way back in the day in the 80s, and what they started uncovering was this horrible abuse of women in many, many ways: forced prostitution, sex trafficking, gender-based violence, et cetera. And And they started researching this and spent years and years going to 9 different countries researching this. And what they're calling for in their book is community action, joining with organizations around the country and the world to fight this unfairness, this injustice.
It strikes me that, in addition, though, to the, you know, the more tragic aspects of that are covered in this, this is a film that's also about empowerment, about women coming together with each other, building a sense of community, and building things for themselves as well. Is that right?
Exactly. They feature they usually feature women who have come up from this abuse themselves and have decided to fight against it. And they're, it's a very sort of negative themed book, but it's always very uplifting because these women have made such a difference in their communities. And so you kind of get that sense of empowerment from this film.
Lisa, with limited time, let's maybe just highlight a couple of the other films that are coming later this fall.
In October, on October 20th, we have a film called As Goes Janesville that actually focuses on the economic downturn when the GM plant closed there back in, I think it was 2008 that happened. And it you know, focuses on what the city is trying to do to have a comeback. Then we have a film called Solar Mamas that focuses on women who are given some empowerment to bring in solar energy into their communities. We have something called Soul Food Junkies, which is about how great soul food is, but how it's actually might be causing some ill health in its community. So there's a whole as you can see, there's a whole different many different themes in this.
Yeah, that sounds like very thought-provoking across kind of the whole spectrum of social justice issues. That's very exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
And then in each of those cases also is time for community engagement.
Yes. I think there are many things that you can do, and that's what we bring our guests in to help with is, you know, many times they tell you exactly what you can do, you know, to start help in your community.
All right. Well, if we could just punctuate one more time the event that's coming up at the end of this week.
Okay, it's Half the Sky by Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wudun at the Sequoia Branch Library at 4340 Tokay Boulevard, and it's at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Is there a website or a place where people can go for more information in general about the series?
Sure. If you go to www.madisonpubliclibrary.org, we have that on our webpage. We also have a Facebook page. Madison Public Library has one, but also Community Cinema Madison has a Facebook page, and you can really, if you go to that one, you can really see the whole series.
All right. Lisa, thank you so much, and we'll look forward to having you on the show sometime to discuss some of the topics in greater detail. But thank you so much for letting us know about this.
Great. Thank you, John.
All right. Have a great day.
And
once again, this is A Public Affair, our Monday edition. I'm John Quinlan. For those of you who haven't been listening the last couple of times, making the transition now from guest host to a regular host, and so I'll be here each and every Monday. And many of you know I've worked in radio. One of my other careers is actually having worked with a group called Outreach as their executive director. I have a long history there. And so this is actually one of my favorite shows to do, is a chance to showcase some of the award winners, some of the folks doing some great work out there, often really don't have a chance to talk about that, to have a light shown on some of the things that they're doing. But as we were mentioning at the top of the show, one of the most powerful things I think we get to do is to share each other's stories. We will hope to do that over the next 45 minutes. Tell you what, we've got a crowded studio here with many folks. I just want to first at the outset just acknowledge one person who isn't able to join us today, and that's Scott Anderson. He's the recipient of Outreach's Courage Award, and this is an award that is only awarded from time to time under usually very special circumstances. Among the other award winners are 3 former governors, including Governor Dreyfus, who signed the gay rights law into effect back in 1982. And anyway, with Scott, the distinction is for his courageous work in the context of the Presbyterian Church, kind of paving the way for an event that happened in this last year, which is his ordination as an openly gay man. That happened right here in Madison, and very exciting. And I encourage you to all go to Our Lives magazine, where I think it was issue before last. Scott did a first-person kind of chronicling of his journey, and very powerful story. I'd hope to have a few words from Scott himself, but because of technical difficulties, don't. But Scott sends his greetings to all of you. He's looking forward to spending time with you coming up this Friday night. And then also more information at lgbtoutreach.org for complete information. Is that, did I get it right?
Very good.
Okay, after 4 years, it's still in there somewhere. Okay. So as we get kicked off today, just to give people kind of the flavor of different folks that we have around the table, if you can introduce yourself by name and or organization and what the award is that Outreach is honoring you with, we'll get started that way, and then we'll come back and have a chance to talk to you a little more in depth. Baltasar, you want to start?
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Baltasar Tianda. I'm here representing the Alianza Latina. It's the first LGBTQ Latino group in the Madison area and the Dane County. And, you know, we are very, very honored by being given this award by Outreach as the organization of the year. And, yeah, I'm just pass the microphone to the next person.
We'll let you fill in the blanks in just a moment. Okay. And Joel?
Hi, everyone. My name is Joel Dufresne. I am receiving the Man of the Year Award. I'm employed at the AIDS Network here in Madison as a prevention specialist. And I've been living here in Madison for 12 years, and I've worked pretty closely with Outreach for those years. And so I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
All right.
I'm Karen Baker, and I've held a few offices at PFLAG. During the time I was the president, I took it upon myself to have a goal to try and get PFLAG into our suburban communities. And in so doing, we sort of stirred the pot in Stoughton. So I'll leave it at that.
All right. A teaser. That's good. That's good for radio. All right. And Faye.
Hi. Faye Farrington. And I've been associated with Outreach for, about 10 or 12 years also. Volunteer of the year, and very pleased to have had that opportunity.
Hey, we'll talk about it later with somebody who's done that. You've done that in so many different ways, whether it's the front desk, but also I think the official photographic chronicler of Outreach. Is that right?
Right.
All right. And Arthur.
Hi, I'm Arthur Durkee. I'm a composer and a singing member of Perfect Harmony Men's Chorus, which is the gay and gay-affirming men's chorus here in Madison. And we just had our 15th anniversary, and I was fortunate enough to be chosen to write the commission for the 15th anniversary, which is a full-length piece called Heartlands, based on the stories of the men in the chorus. And that's my teaser.
Wow. Great stuff. And Cindy.
Okay, thanks. I'm Cindy Crane, and I believe I'm being recognized for some work I've done through a small business called Sicardia, looking at the intersections between religion and sexuality, and I'm ready to self-publish a small book with essays and poems from LGBT youth that are related to religion, and I've done some work in the church as a Lutheran pastor, out of the closet Lutheran pastor, and then also I believe I'm being recognized somewhat for some work I did at GSAFE as the former executive director.
All of those things. I have to be a little bit familiar with that particular
scattered
nomination.
Scattered or Renaissance woman.
That's
you
right.
Choose.
Absolutely. Hey, Cindy, why don't you hold on to the mic for just a second. Okay. I'm going to try to weave all of this together. But one other aspect of your activism is just kind of in the multicultural realm. You're someone who's lived in different parts of the world. You're bilingual in terms of some of the work that you did when you first moved to Madison. You were working with senior citizens in the Latino community. Mm-hmm. Could you just reflect a little bit about our community and sometimes the fact that we don't necessarily embrace the fact that we are in all communities. There is overlap,
right,
and there is interconnection.
First of all, the word bilingual is used loosely in Madison. But thank you for calling me that. Right. Well, in response to that, first of all, I have to say I'm thrilled that there is a group such as Alianza, because I do think that oftentimes people from non-white cultures sometimes have to choose between finding alliances with other people of color or from the particular culture out of which they have emerged, or with white LGBT people if they are LGBT. And so that's a kind of split that is hard for, I think, a lot of people of all ages who are LGBTQI and beyond faiths. I think probably Baltazar would be able to address that more, but that is something that I've witnessed. And I know during the amendment issue, there were some same-sex couples I encountered, which one was, you know, someone from the United States, born and raised here, and then someone from another country. The ones I knew happened to be from Latin America, but couldn't have rights to stay here through their relationship as, of course, a heterosexual, someone with heterosexual privilege would have been able to have.
Yeah, many painful stories that yeah. work their way out that way.
Yeah, and it got yeah. missed during the whole amendment issue.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, Baltazar, let's bring you into this conversation. Is some of what Cindy is observing is are there special challenges that people face when they're, in this case, both Latina or Latino and LGBT?
You know, I always say that the LGBT Latino community is a minority within a minority. Right. Yep. And then if you do not have documents, you become a really, you know, a third minority within that minority. Yes, they are. And, you know, many people ask, why do we always, you know, we're in America, you know, North America. Why do we always have to have stuff for Latinos, you know, in Spanish? I always say that when I use the word I love you in English, it doesn't mean anything to me. But when I say it in Spanish, that has a really important meaning. And that's why, you know, the fact of having a Latino group where our program is in Spanish really helps people to be who they are, to put themselves out there and to feel welcome.
Absolutely. What could you talk, I guess, just about some of the maybe the challenges that there are in terms of bringing a group together? Sometimes folks, I think, make assumptions based on white privilege, perhaps, that they can be out in most capacities. Is that always the case with folks that maybe come to your group?
Being out within the Latino community is really, really, it's difficult, just like it with any other communities. Obviously, the religion part has yeah. to do a lot with that. And let me just very, very quick, just say how Alianza Latina started. This lady came to me. I was working as a Latino Family Resource Center coordinator over at Veracourt, and she took her 2 hours to tell me that her two sons were gay. I kind of knew because you could see it, you know, but she was like, oh, my gosh, and, you know, her name is Blanca. She's the reason why we started the group. Mm-hmm. We went around asking, are there any resources? None. And that's why then later Diego Campoverde and myself, together with many leaders of the city of Madison and the Dane County, kind of put the group together. I have to be honest. I thought we were going to be having people shooting all over at us because we were the Latino. You know, many times we make assumptions.
Yeah.
Many times we say, oh, you know, so and so is not, you know, people are not going to be okay if we come out. We have only one person say bad comments about our group. Everybody has really welcomed us with the open arms. You know, people from the community, even another programs that I have in the community centers I work, you know, they are very, very open. We are trying to, you know, push the word out there. We're going to have a radio show the last Friday of the month from 9 to 10 over at La Movida, 1480 a.m., you know, because we're going to bring that message to everyone. Everyone who listens to the radio. So far, we have not found any big issues. So far, people have been very, very welcoming. Even the staff, you know, the people I work in the community center, you know, there are five of them are Latino. I am an open gay man because that's one of the reasons we created Alianza Latina so that they can see another role models. And, you know, my staff is like, okay, you are gay, so what? You know, who cares? You know, which is great, you know. But again, but it doesn't have to... but I think our youth have issues. You know, I, as a group, one of the things that happens, we have received all the support from the city, from outreach, from all these organizations. As an organization, we're doing good. As individuals, you know, once they go back to their schools, once they go back to their homes, that's where the issue might start, you know, and they keep bringing them, you know, that's why we are here.
Mm-hmm. Again, we're going to try to link things as we go along, but one logical linkage before you pass the microphone on to Joel is well, we don't want to conflate these issues. They don't overlap entirely, but in terms of issues of AIDS education, there are special challenges in African American, Latino, other minority communities. And some of that seems to me sometimes, of course, linked back to homophobia, the association that goes with being gay. I mean, it just strikes me that work like you're doing in terms of trying to strip away or get at the essence of homophobia maybe will make it easier to do work on AIDS education and other things. Does that linkage make sense?
Yeah, and you're talking about AIDS education?
Yes.
Yeah. I still find people in the community, in the Latino community, who say, you know, I keep telling them, have you gone to test yourself, you know, for HIV or else? It's, oh, no, I'm not gay. I'm like, maybe you need to go and do that, you know. We had condoms at the community center, you know, at Bridge Lake Point, and we always push people, you know. We have Planned Parenthood, and they come and talk about all those things, but they still do nothing that you can get infected. The only ones who get infected are the people in the gay community.
Yeah,
yeah, that's still there, you know. That's still very much out there.
So all of these things, I guess, you know, room for common cause, reasons why all these things should connect together.
Yeah.
Joel, move the mic over to you. And Angie was mentioning several different areas of your activism. I'm going to maybe start with the last one because I think it kind of amplifies this connection of different issues. But there's something called the Wilma Fund that I know that you've been involved with. Could you explain a little bit about that?
Sure. A friend of mine, Donald, does Wilma's Fund, and it's really amazing because it's dealing with homeless LGBT community. So we've put together shows and fundraising events to raise money to help folks, and it's been very, very successful. And it's been kind of fun to play with that, and because it's a challenge, of course, of anything. And like with me, I'm a 43-year-old openly gay HIV positive, drag queen. So I've got all these things that are going up against me. So as a part of being in the community is breaking down all these walls of stigma against everybody. And then because you're gay and just because you're HIV positive and, you know, you shouldn't be looked down upon, you know, so we want to embrace everybody and get rid of all those stigmas. And so that's my ultimate goal and passion.
Is it a challenge sometimes letting the larger LGBT community and our allies, you know, make them aware of the fact that homelessness and some of these other issues that for us seem in a different realm, that they're folks that are affecting our neighbors and our friends?
Yeah, it's because you don't think of that. You just think of homeless as homeless, but it affects everybody. And then when you have especially youth that may be coming out to their families or things and they get kicked out because they have to deal with homophobia in their own families, and they have nowhere to turn to. So
Angie had mentioned two other things. I left my notes in the car,
okay.
So you're going to have to help me a little bit. Positively, is there a group that you're involved with?
Because I work at the AIDS Network, I have a support group called Positive Light, and it's a group of gay and bisexual men living with HIV, and we meet twice a month. And it's just getting together, and it's talking about things in our own lives and good things and bad things, and it's low stress, and there's no anxiety, and you know, it's great to be a part of this group because it's building, and we are getting members of this group that are either who have been positive for 30 years or somebody who is newly diagnosed. Mm-hmm. So as a group, we can help each other, especially if somebody who is newly diagnosed, And I've been positive for 15 years, and I can guide them and let them know what they're going to be able to expect and things like that. So,
and the other thing Angie mentioned is you've been a long time supporter and participant in the ACT ride.
Yep, this past year was, I've got my cup here, it's got an ACT ride on it. this past year was our 10-year, so it was pretty big and it was pretty amazing. It was my fifth year riding. It's a 300-mile bike ride, which you raise lots and lots of money. This year we raised over $267,000 for the AIDS Network. And what this money goes to is it helps, you know, our clients, and it helps to maintain the services that we provide. I'm in prevention, so it maintains prevention, legal services. You know, so we have a food pantry, and now we have our dental clinic. So it gives our clients some normalcy and a quality of life that, you know, they can feel comfortable coming in. And so, yeah, the ACT ride is a big passion for me. So, and I'll do it until there's a cure. So,
and it strikes me, just the folks that I know participate, it's one of these life changing experiences.
It really,
connections that last for.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, there are so many things that you can do with the ACT ride. If you like riding 300 miles, sounds like something that you wouldn't want to do, because it can be very challenging. But there's other things that you can do. You can be part of crew and volunteer and, you know, cheer on riders, be a cook, do medical. So there's all other things, and we need all these volunteers to make this work. So
sneak in one other interconnection. A good friend of mine, Stephanie Wisneski, who was my co-host and producer on a previous version of this radio show, was an ACT ride participant. And yesterday there was a benefit for her.
Yes.
She's experiencing both breast cancer, a stroke that followed, but that circle of friendship and supportive community followed her as well.
Yeah, and then the group from the ACT ride was there for her yesterday, and they raised over $5,000 for her, and it's a family unit that of the selfless people that come out and help each other. And whether you're gay or straight, it's pretty amazing to be a part of it. And you're right, it really is a life changing experience. It really is.
All right, we'll move on down the table, and Karen Baker is here again. Karen, a longtime leader in PFLAG, parents, family, and friends of lesbians and gays. You know, as Joel's talking about that sense of supportive community, you were writing to me that, of course, like a lot of PFLAG folks, your motivation for becoming involved was a family member. You know, I think a lot of parents look at the prospect of a child coming out, and that it maybe paints a picture of isolation and lack of community, lack of support, lack of family relationships. Has it turned out that way for your son, for you, in terms of being part of this larger community?
No, it actually hasn't turned out that way. I sort of knew he was gay before he knew he was gay.
Like a lot of parents.
So the whole coming out thing, okay, he just got around to it, you know.
Uh-huh.
Hi, dear. He might be listening from Georgia. it does still take a little bit of time to acclimate.
Yeah.
I guess when you actually are, you know, he came out in a letter, so I'm reading the letter. But I could also see that there was work that needed to be done, and really wanting what any parent wants for every child, to be happy, to be safe, to love the people they want to love. So I said to him, well, you know what? I'm not like a public speaker or anything, so I'm not Judy Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
Short of that, you know, what can I do? And he said, I think you ought to check out two different organizations. As an educator, you might want to check out GLSEN, and as a parent, you might want to check out PFLAG. And I had never heard of either of them at that point in my life. So I followed his advice. GLSEN happened to meet on Wednesday night, which was my church choir night. So, sorry, GLSEN, I had to go to PFLAG. They were meeting on Sunday afternoons. So that doesn't mean I haven't had a strong bond with now called G-Safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of my goals, to have a real partnership between PFLAG and G-Safe, which continues to this day. It's actually how we got involved in these community festivals. By working with the Gay Straight Alliances at Monona Grove, La Follette High Schools, we were participating in the Monona Memorial Day Parade. by partnering with the Gay Straight Alliance at the Stoughton High School. We participated with them at homecoming, and then came the big Send to My event, which takes over all of Stoughton in May. The first year, which was 2 years ago now, we were only allowed to be in that parade. We had to compromise, and the compromise was we had to cover the words gay and lesbian on our PFLAG banner. Now, I looked at that and said, that's just crazy. But I'd really like to be in this parade. And we have kids that want to be in the parade.
Yeah.
So we were just parents and friends that day with a lovely piece of rainbow paper covering the other words.
That wasn't quite enough, though, was it?
That wasn't quite enough because, well, the next year we were actually invited back. And when we came back, I had not covered the words on the banner. And so we were confronted and told that we could not be in the parade unless those words were covered. So I said I wasn't going to cover them. I frankly found it fairly silly in 2012 to be covering these words. So we just stood with our sign on the sidewalk and watched the other parade entrants go by, many of whom kind of gave us the thumbs up and called out, yay, PFLAG. And then there were a fair amount of young families around us, and they were kind of starting to, you know, talk among themselves. They can't just keep you out of this parade. Just go march, you know. A couple of them had been my students at elementary school, and they're going, we'll bail you out if you need it, Ms. Baker. So I guess I never had done anything that would be considered civil disobedience. But I looked at the group of six adults that were there with me, and there was an entry in the parade that said, Inclusive Dream Park. And I thought, oh, inclusive. Maybe they would let us play. So we just jumped in the parade right behind them, and we marched. And so it has caused a bit of a stir. I wrote a letter to the editor thanking the Inclusive Dream Park people who were wonderful to us, and I think also received some additional funds from PFLAG and others who supported us because of their kindness. So I thank them for that. The last time I checked, I believe there are still letters to the editor appearing in the hub. So it has caused a fairly sustained controversy.
But they're across the spectrum, not just against or for.
They are overwhelmingly in favor. Yeah. There have been a few who are pretty upset at us. Mm. But my heart is very warmed by the support that we've received from Stoughton people saying, you know, come on back. So we'll see what next year.
Like everyone around this room, we could spend a full hour with you. But I guess there's one other aspect that fascinates me about PFLAG is observing the folks who come for the first meeting. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can give us a little bit of a snapshot of what that looks like, what people can expect.
Well, if you come to your first meeting, we usually have a program, and it's listed on our Facebook page or our website. And then the second hour of the meeting is a sharing circle. And so at that time, you're free to say what's on your heart or not. It's up to you. And that is, of course, all in strictest confidentiality. In the years since I've been a part of PFLAG, you know, we used to have multiple boxes of tissues that would sit in the middle of the circle. And our board has commented in the last, you know, several years. I think we could find a box of tissues somewhere, but They're it's really different now. The parents who are coming seem not as distraught about the situation. They seem to be coming for education and for possible advocacy. We, of course, offer the support if it's needed, but it just doesn't seem to be quite as urgent.
Just, I mean, resonating with your experience in Stoughton, though, of course, we still live in a world where there is homophobia.
Yes, there
that's a reality. So for that parent that I know before I came out, that just got amplified, and it, the fear that was there was just beyond all proportion, and yet it was real, too. I had to be conscious of it for my safety and everything. Is that a part of what you're able to instill in parents, give them sort of a sense of perspective and how it all plays out?
I think so. I think just sitting there listening, you know, we all tell our stories month after month, and the stories for most of us don't, you know, drastically change. So as new people come and they hear the stories of people who have had, you know, a long association with gay members of their family, they take heart in that and can go from there.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for sharing. Mm-hmm. And keep on pushing down in Stoughton.
Well, hey,
that's great, good stuff. Well, Faye Farrington is here, and as noted earlier, she's Outreach's Volunteer of the Year. I think this is something that everybody associated with volunteer, I mean, with outreach really holds in special esteem, because it's really volunteers that help things going. And there's always been a very dedicated staff, he will say very immodestly, and over the years. But you've got an incredibly dedicated group of people willing to put in at least 3 hours a week, often much more. How have you seen how volunteers drive the programs at Outreach?
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, I have to say we've been blessed with some real effective leadership.
Yeah.
And I must mention Harry Straits, who had this huge job of 100 or 200 volunteers, and coordinating them and supporting them and guiding them, because you wouldn't guess the number of complexities that can arise when you have people making appearances and addressing different groups and inviting other groups in. And Harry was particularly effective and dedicated to one of the groups for folks who, gosh, I can't remember what they called it, but it was people
experiencing emotional illness, is that what you're thinking of?
That was part of it.
Yeah.
That was part of it, yeah. And it worked beautifully with them. So, I latched on to that, you know. I latched on to Outreach because I had retired in 98, thought it was going to be an effortless transition because I have a lot of interests. Really didn't know quite what to do with myself, and went back to work part-time a couple times. And one day I stalked into, and that is the word, into the predecessor of Outreach when it was located on the square.
Yep, the United, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll never forget, I walked in and this kind woman said, "Can I help you?" And I said, "No."
Oh, no.
I had never been in a place like that in my life, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe I could add just a little bit of flavor to that. I had spent about 20 years in active duty and reserve military. So I was not forthcoming as far as who I was, to say the least. But that one exposure resulted in a returning, and I had a rationale for going to Outreach then. I needed to donate books.
Yeah.
See? And so that started it all at the it's been about 5 years, and I must say, really found my life getting more and more organized and getting to know more people. I mean, a volunteer probably benefits more than the people who receive whatever one has to offer.
Really is reciprocal, that one, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the other aspect I think that your experience epitomizes is it's an intergenerational community, and we forget that sometimes.
Exactly.
The young people coming out sometimes don't disconnect with folks that come out later in life or have been out all their lives or other things. Is outreach building some bridges there, some bridges of understanding? Do you find that in your own experience, that you get to relate to folks of different ages and different backgrounds?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm a few days short of 75, and I came out to myself in 55.
Yeah.
And as we were speaking the other day in a meeting at Outreach, 'twas a far, far different world.
Yeah.
Nobody even knew the word gay except we ourselves. Mm. And we would joke about it because people say, "Oh, what a gay evening," and we would laugh. because we knew what that meant.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I had come out to myself. It took years before I had more than one friend, a young man with whom we had exchanged information about ourselves. I went off to college. I had a goal of traveling. I joined the Army, et cetera, et cetera. When I joined, this might be of interest, when I joined the Army, there was a paper that you had to sign that said if you lie about your homosexuality, you are subject to 5 years in prison and a $10,000 fine.
Mm. Yeah.
And my hand shook so that I took comfort in thinking that no one would ever be able to identify my signature. So anyway, that was sort of the background that where I came to Madison.
Yeah.
And does Outreach help bridge that gap enormously?
Yeah.
Occasionally a person would come in whom I hadn't been out to. And, you know, so you a little bit here, a little bit there. You start going to activities, and you benefit immensely.
Yeah.
I am out to anyone and everyone except a couple of members of my family.
Got to have you all back. We could program the rest of the fall here, I think, in terms of some of the stories you're sharing. But thank you also for bringing up the memory of Harry. And of course, someone else we lost at the same time, a former staff person, Nikki Bomblatt. You know, I think we learned through those memorial services and the times of celebration and sharing of their lives, just the many ways that Outreach is able to touch, you know, so many people, the importance of these supportive services, not just Outreach, of course, but all the different groups that serve our community. But thanks for bringing up his memory. I actually, just to come back to you, Karen, I know you all have lost a recent leader. Is it Doris? Doris Larson?
Oh, Joyce Larson.
Joyce Larson, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Past president of PFLAG, yes. Her funeral is just Saturday.
It's coming up on Saturday, so we also want to
This remember, past Saturday.
This
yes.
past Saturday mm-hmm. it was,
yes.
but we want to remember her. Cause
yes.
As you know, when you're in that president's role, there's so many different ways you contribute. She certainly
exactly.
did that.
Yes, she did. Yes,
all right.
She
did. Okay, we'll move around the table to Arthur Durkee.
Yeah.
And, yeah, thanks for your patience and everything.
Oh, no, my pleasure. I love hearing these stories.
You know, you're in a realm that I think sometimes we also have a disconnect. We forget, even though the stereotype would say every gay man is into music and Broadway shows.
You know, there's that. Somebody started a movement a few years ago that, you know, if you took all the lesbians and gays and trannies and drag queens and everything out of the entertainment business, there would be no entertainment business.
Exactly.
And that's actually true, in my opinion. I'm biased, but I believe that. So
this theme of storytelling is especially interesting in your case. You talked about at the top of the show that you actually had a chance to produce an original work.
Yeah, with Perfect Harmony Men's Chorus last year. Well, this year is the 15th anniversary of the founding of that chorus, and it's part of this overall LGBT choral movement that started about 35 years ago when the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, newly founded in like the late 70s, traveled around the country, and little choruses grew up in their wake. And now it's a huge movement, and there was a every 4 years there's a convention This past July, it was in Denver, and my piece was part of my piece was done there. 6,500 delegates, singing members, artistic directors, staff, board members, all converged on Denver, and that was about as gay as Denver has ever been. I think it was tremendous, just fantastic fun. Really intense.
And some of the stories that you're evoking are those that, again, are a little told. We think of ourselves as an urban community, I think, primarily.
Well, and that's actually the whole point here. The piece that I ended up writing as the 15th anniversary of Commission for Perfect Harmony is called Heartlands. And it was basically built around the stories of the men in the chorus and some other people and friends and some of the women who are, like, on the board of directors and, you know, who contributed ideas. And I interviewed a lot of people. Some people gave me stories of their lives in essay form. Some people gave me some poems. And I took all of that, and over about a year, 10 months or so, I turned that into poetry and then set it to music, because that's what I do. I'm a composer and a musician and a songwriter. And it was fascinating to go through that process and see how many things we all had in common. In terms of our stories, the threads, and then there were some individual standout pieces that got turned into, hey, this is a really unique story and a uniquely fun way to do it. And it was really fun because a couple of those songs were actually sung by the person who inspired the song.
Oh, wow.
In the concert, and that was a lot of fun. But doing it, one of the unique things about it is this isn't the first time. There's been a commission for a gay men's chorus or a gay women's chorus about, you know, what it's like. But it's the first time it's ever been done about the Heartlands. You know, San Francisco's done it. New York's done it. Portland, Oregon has done it. Places, you know, the big coasts and the big urban ghettos. But one of the points of this piece is that nobody's really talked about what it's like to grow up and live gay in the Heartlands, you know, in a small town, on a farm. You know, Will Fellows wrote a great book called Farm Boys, which is an oral history, which is really the first time that had ever been done, ever, and that was the 1990s. And then this is the first choral piece that's ever been done like that. But my feeling, and even before I wrote this piece, my feeling has been that the biggest divide between us in the LGBTQI community is not, you know, between lesbians and gays or between leather people and radical fairies. It's between rural people and urban people.
Yeah.
I mean, I've gotten into huge arguments about Brokeback Mountain because I've lived in rural Wyoming, and that movie is real. And I had arguments with people in San Francisco urban ghettos who were like, no, that's fiction. No, it's not.
Yeah. Just off of that, Will Fellows and I were having kind of a conversation in our lives about these issues. And early in my tenure at Outreach, someone had called me from, I think, the rural southwestern Wisconsin group. And you know, just they had a bone to pick, and I think with legitimate reasons.
Yeah.
I think in terms of urban folks make all these, you know, and why don't you have a rainbow flag? Why aren't you doing all the other things?
Just because, and why don't you move? Why don't you move to the urban ghetto like everybody else is supposed to do and join us?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I like living on a farm. I do.
that's what really came through. If we're really wanting equality, we've got to want it.
Yeah.
People that have the right to live everywhere and not to be ghettoized.
Right,
and,
exactly.
Yeah.
And that shows up in the music, too. So
absolutely. Mm-hmm. Just the last observation is it must be powerful to go to places like Denver and these national gatherings and share kind of the richness of a Wisconsin experience.
Oh,
it's such a coastal bias sometimes, coastal urban bias.
And yeah. No, it was a treasure. Yeah. And a lot of the comments we got back from people who heard our set at Gala were very much along those lines. And they were like, somebody told my story. This is so fantastic. It was great.
Yeah.
It was really fulfilling. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Well, Cindy Crane, we come full circle here. And,
okay.
we started talking about some of the connections with multiculturalism and other issues. In the interest of full disclosure, as someone who nominated you in this case this year, I'm especially familiar with all the different connections that you have in the community. It's obviously the nature of our different civil rights struggles that we can learn from other struggles and other things. But you've I think, you know, hit on a couple of other interesting things, you know, through your work with Sicardia and previously G-Safe, the whole idea of bullying and how that can impose itself on people's lives. You've taken that lesson and not just and extended it beyond the LGBT community. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Actually.
Just a little closer on the
mic. Okay, sure. While I was working at JuSafe, I was either consciously or unconsciously a lot of the time reflecting on rites in the church, you know. And before I get to answering your question directly, I remember there was a time in the church that I was happy to be tolerated. And, you know, through working with an organization that celebrates LGBT people, there, you know, it's different to be celebrated or to you think of yourself as thriving as opposed to someone tolerating you. And, you know, I translated that into the church. Everybody says they're open, but what does that mean? It's different according to context. And then I also looked at a lot of the work on bullying at JuSafe, and I thought a lot about it from a faith perspective. And there isn't much out there from a faith perspective, but I just read a remarkable book by Barbara Caruso on bullying. And she quotes a rabbi. It's not a faith-based book, but she quotes Rabbi Lerner. I can't think of his first name. Michael Lerner, thank you very much. I really like him in other in other ways too, but he calls bullying a process of desanctification. And she said, Barbara Caruso said a lot of the same things that I've read in other places about bullying, but the word she added that was really interesting to me was contempt, that a person may be an equal opportunity bully, and, you know, that's kind of good because then everybody says, oh, he's nasty or she's nasty. But oftentimes a bully is very kind to many people but will target certain people and will somehow internally justify going against what he or she says is, you know, that person's morals. So you may be kind and decent to others, but if you have contempt for a person, then that internally gives you an excuse to treat that person differently. And of course, I think many people in the LGBT community, you know, have experienced that. Someone might be a religious person, but say, but internally feel contempt for a certain individual and then justify turning that person into other. And so we do have I am working with a team in the Lutheran Church to address bullying issues from a faith perspective.
Cindy, I apologize. Time is
I am done. More to say.
I have one more question for you, however. I remember we were in a conversation last night in a different group, and I think you talked about your Lutheran-ness, and I think that weaves its way through, whether it's in Stoughton or other places.
Yeah.
You know, you could have gone to another denomination when you were finding for ordination, but you decided to stay and maintain that fight. Why was that important to you?
Oh, how long do I have?
About a minute.
Well, I'm just always fascinated by how each person responds differently to different oppressions they find within their religion. Some people find it easy to leave, and some people leave and then find that wasn't the right decision. I just never, you know, it's pretty basic. I just never felt the nudge to leave. There wasn't that. That it's probably as basic as that, and I don't know why.
Yeah, well, it seems like it's something that weaves its way through all of your stories in terms of staying in there and, with, you know, the community and you know, adapting, getting people to know your realities. And so, so very powerful evening still to come this week, coming up on Friday, when we'll be able to recognize all the different work that you're doing in so many different realms. LGBT Outreach.org is the website. Let's give each other a great round of applause.